On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
We are at war, a new kind of war we have been slow to comprehend. In this war, the battle space is limitless. That's one of the things that leads off our book for today, Battlefield Cyber, How China and Russia Are Undermining Our Democracy and National Security. It's by Michael McLaughlin and William Bill Holstein from Prometheus Books. We're going to talk to Bill in just a moment. First, let me say that his co-author is the former senior counterintelligence advisor for U.S. Cyber Command, where he was responsible for the coordination of all Department of Defense counterintelligence operations in cyberspace. He also oversaw counterintelligence support to every U.S. military offensive and defensive cyberspace operation worldwide. He had spent a career conducting clandestine operations and sensitive activities across Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. His vantage of the changing face of modern warfare is that of both the shadow warrior on the front lines and a trusted advisor to the military's senior-most commanders. He currently serves as research affiliate at the Applied Research Laboratory for Intelligence and Security. Bill Holstein was based in Hong Kong and Beijing for United Press International and has been following U.S.-China relations more than 40 years. He has specialized in covering technology since joining U.S. News & World Report in 1996. He has worked for or written for Business Week, The New York Times, Business 2.0, Fortune, and other top publications. And we are delighted to welcome Bill to On the Bookshelf.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me just say that I'm married to a psychologist. Every author needs a counselor in their home. So I say to her, why won't people talk to me more about China technology and these issues? And she says to me, people have just gone through a pandemic. They're worried about health issues. They're worried about the polarization of American political debate and the bitter nature of that. They're worried about wildfires and floods and weird environmental things happening. And they're, in general, they have so much on their plates, they don't have time. They don't have the emotional capacity to deal with something like what you are writing about. And so I understand that it's very difficult for people to wrap their brains around the idea that the Chinese and the Russians are making fools out of us in so many ways. But it really is a threat to our democracy as we understand it and to our national security. We are being played in ways that we never imagined.
And I think part of this, Bill, is that we like to think that everybody's like us, and we like to think that we're really great people. And I'm proud to be an American. I know you are, too. But
I'm absolutely, yes.
But we tend to look at the world with rose-colored glasses, thinking, oh, surely they're not hacking into our systems. Oh, no, that can't be. I've been following the story about China having a particular building where they've been putting all their hackers to work for years going after us. And so this does not come as an enormous surprise. And after the debacles that occurred with the last two national elections with so much animosity, well, what better way to keep us stirred up and not focus on what they're doing in Ukraine than for Russian hackers to be messing with us and sending out false information and using pictures and...
AI is going to compound this problem. Now the Chinese are using AI to generate images that are propagated on our social media. Most recent example was they put out the message that the fire in Maui, Hawaii, was actually work of U.S. intelligence agents. I mean, our domestic divisions are part our fault, of course, but they have learned how to exacerbate our divisions through social media. I may just give you one example. The Russians, a single Russian entity, and we write about this in the book, it creates a website that says all teachers should carry guns in schools. It's in English, and it works its way into the American ecosystem, the American information ecosystem. The same Russian entity puts out another website that says teachers should never carry weapons in schools. It's against the American way of life, and it risks more violence. And so they put that website out in fluent English. It also is absorbed into the American ecosystem, social media, where nobody knows who anybody is. But these two websites put out by a single Russian entity then start arguing with each other, right? They attempt to inflame the Americans who are following them without knowing that they're Russian websites. So the Russians are skilled at playing our wedge issues, gun control or abortion or any of these issues. They know how to play us against each other. So are they alone doing this? No, but I mean, we have created this situation ourselves. But they are exacerbating it. That's not the only avenue of attack from the authoritarian nations. The ransomware attacking the Colonial Pipeline, for example, shut down the flow of gasoline and energy to the East Coast a couple of years ago. And so the average American sitting there in a line at a gasoline station, the average American has no idea that, well, Russian malware or Chinese malware did this to us. In this case, it was the Russians. So it reflects on the failure of our own institutions. They seek to erode our confidence in our institutions, which is clearly under attack. So if Americans stop believing in their institutions and stop believing in their constitution and the processes we've had in place for a couple of centuries, that strikes at the core of who we are as Americans.
We are to blame for much of the access that they have. One of the things that the major industries wanted to do business with the Chinese, they have to allow the Chinese access to their systems. And this is somewhat akin to saying, well, I'd sure like to move into a new neighborhood. The local gangster that is in charge of the neighborhood will let me in, but I've got to give him a copy of the keys to my house. They can do whatever they want to because they can get into your house and take anything you want.
So the core problem is that we Americans invented the Internet. We invented these very complex computing systems. We invented routers and servers, and we invented it. And so we believe that spread all over the world, and it would be part of the American legacy, the American footprint in the world, and that no one would dare use it against us. We believe that we had technological superiority. Guess what? We did not build security into our systems. We exploited these systems for the fun, for the global reach. We exploited them for the profit-making capability. But we never thought that somebody would start to penetrate these systems and use them against us. So we have a 30-year legacy of arrogance, frankly, of not believing that anyone would dare do this to us, the Americans. Aren't we the technologically most sophisticated people in the world? Well, so as you mentioned, one of the things that Microsoft and Apple and Amazon Web Services did was they went to China and they built up large presences there. Microsoft sells 70 different products there, has hundreds, if not thousands, of Chinese employees and research. And they've shared the source code for Windows and many other products they sell there. There's debate about, did Microsoft share it? Was it stolen? Was it demonstrated? But the fact of the matter is that in the cyber community, it's widely assumed that the Chinese have access to the inner workings of Microsoft's systems. And that's borne out by the fact that in the Microsoft Exchange attack, email exchange attack in 2021, the Chinese were doing that. Most recently, the Chinese were involved in obtaining encryption keys into Microsoft's cloud-based email systems that resulted in their penetration of Commerce Department and State Department emails. We have created these pathways, these avenues, for the Chinese in particular, far more sophisticated than the Russians in general. But we've created these pathways in our major technology companies for them to penetrate into the heart of our systems, the systems that control our economy and control our government.
And in case you're just joining us, we're talking to Bill Holstein, who is the author, along with Michael McLaughlin, of Battlefield Cyber, How China and Russia Are Undermining Our Democracy and National Security. It's from Prometheus Books, an imprint of Globe Pequo. We hear a lot in movies about the dark web, and so much that most people probably figure that's like zombies and Bigfoot or something, that's just something they write about in movies. Here's what you say in the book: the Internet as you know it, the World Wide Web you use on a daily basis, which is Googleable, comprises only about 10% of the information available on the total Internet. That's the surface web. Then you talk about the deep web and the dark web. So there's layers that most people, the average consumer of social media, has no idea how much information is really out there and what it's being used to accomplish, which is not always in our best interest.
No, the ransomware is a whole industry, primarily Russian. And so on the dark web, you find players who are offering their ransomware services. Here's how you broach or breach into a system. Here are the tools you need. Here's how you communicate with the company or the government and how you demand that you be paid in Bitcoin in a Swiss bank account or a bank account in Liechtenstein. So all the tools that a ransomware attacker needs are available for sale on the dark web. So it's a cesspool. The internet has become a real cesspool. In the book, we talk about, you want to buy an assassination, you want to kill your wife, there are places on the dark web, if you're smart enough, to know how to get there without getting caught. Yeah, that exists. The bad actors have developed the internet in a way that is filled with danger and filled with evil, frankly. So you just can't wipe that out overnight. These operators, threat actors, are able to operate off of servers in multiple countries. So here's where the Chinese are sophisticated. Their APTs, Advanced Persistent Threat Groups, can have servers in 30 different countries, and they have capabilities in those servers. And so if they attack a system in the United States, it looks like it's coming from North Macedonia. Oh, no, wait, it's coming from Malaysia. So so it comes from all these different directions. It's very difficult to determine where is it coming from because of the existence of this dark web.
Something else that I found very scary and bothersome is that in 2012, U.S. Army General Keith Alexander, who was the director of the National Security Agency and the first commander of U.S. Cyber Command, described the Chinese theft of American intellectual property as the greatest transfer of wealth in history. That all this engineering and manufacturing prowess, key industries, pharmaceuticals to stealth fighter jets, all been stolen from the United States through the internet by the Chinese.
A combination of human espionage, of course, plus the online theft of secrets. So you there in Alabama are a major defense player. I saw that the University of Alabama's business school says that the defense sector is $50 billion a year in your economy, or roughly 21% of Alabama's economy is the defense sector.
Right.
So the defense industrial sector, this gets into the deep-rooted nature of our problem. All these companies are private sector companies. They exist to make money, which is fair, which is I'm not against making money. But the Pentagon, of course, is government. And so they depend on these 300,000 companies to create technology, to create products, to create... Isn't the F-35 manufactured in Alabama?
No kidding.
Well, I mean, you have some very sophisticated work going on there. So suppliers they want to supply the Pentagon, they want to make money, but they don't want the Pentagon to look into their systems, to audit their IT systems, because that's a violation of what we Americans view as a natural delineation between government, the big government, and business. Business people don't want the government looking into their systems. That's a violation of their rights, of their privileges. And so they've been able to stop the Pentagon from getting into from auditing, looking at their systems. The Pentagon tried to hire third-party auditors, not government, but third-party, private sector auditors, to look into these systems, and that also was resisted because it was politically was just not palatable. So as a result, the Chinese have been able to be very active in the American defense industrial base and have stolen so much information, up to and including, get this, the Fujian, F-U-J-I-A-N, aircraft carrier that they have recently launched is a dead ringer for the Gerald R. Ford aircraft carrier class. which is so the Chinese have been able to get into the American defense industrial base's systems to steal the knowledge of how to make aircraft carriers, how to build aircraft carriers. Isn't that staggering?
Yes. Yes.
So, and they've been able to get into the American Office of Personnel Management to steal the personally identifiable information of 22 million members of the U.S. government. And then in 2018, the Advanced Persistent Threat, APT-10, stole another 100,000 names of members of the U.S. Navy. And you have, obviously, members of the armed forces there in Alabama. So the Chinese possess the passport numbers, the Social Security numbers for the vast majority of members of the U.S. military. So this is how profound it is that we've been breached, we've been penetrated, and because we don't agree on what we should do, and we have this gap between public sector and the private sector, we have not really responded, and the government is not really organized to respond. We have capabilities within the Department of Commerce, Department of Homeland Security, FBI, National Security Agency, but they don't coordinate with each other.
Yeah.
So we are flying blind basically in our competition against a primarily the Chinese, but also the Russians are playing this game. We have just not protected ourselves. We have left ourselves vulnerable.
Another aspect of that I discovered over the last couple of years were things like, which seemed like a great idea when they first came to a lot of universities, something called the Confucius Institute.
Right. These
were built wherever the universities would make them welcome, and often they were accompanied by increased numbers of Chinese students traveling to the United States to take classes at inflated prices, and therefore it was really good for the university to have these students on campus. But what we began to realize is that the Confucius Institutes were not there to promote Chinese culture. They were there to keep an eye on their students, make sure they stayed in line, and to steal data on American.
Be careful. I mean, the Confucius Institutes provide money, and they negotiate contracts with universities to not discuss difficult subjects like Tibet or Taiwan or the subjugation of Hong Kong. So the universities accept the money, and they then put on programs that are pro-Chinese, basically, pro-PRC. The students come through different channels, and the government has organizes student associations at universities. So each university where there are large numbers of Chinese students, they have a Chinese student association that then reports or liaises with a member of the Chinese government and Chinese missions in the United States, the diplomatic missions. It's very complex. It's not quite as simple as you laid it out. So then some Chinese students go back to China with knowledge about how the American system works, improved English, and some research advantages. Other Chinese students go to work for American companies, and some even go to work for the American military. So recently, there are two Chinese Americans with some degree of American paperwork, citizenship, green card, whatever. They were accepted into the U.S. Navy. And the FBI in Southern California recently arrested two of them who had joined the U.S. Navy and were funneling secrets about the Navy, the Navy's installations in California, back to their Chinese handlers.
Hmm.
So the thrust of your question was right, but you need to understand that there are these different mechanisms that they're using to penetrate. Now, so this is one of the most sensitive things that Mike and I talk about is the Chinese Americans in our country. There are 3 or 4 million of them. We don't want to have a witch hunt, a Chinese scare, a witch, any kind of negative campaign against them. As a nation of immigrants, we believe in the fact that people come here from all over the world and makes us stronger and makes us better. But the Chinese government is very cynically exploiting this presence of Chinese Americans, and it's something that it's a blind spot for us because of our deep sensitivities about not wanting to single out a single ethnic group. So it's something that we have not yet come up with a real solid answers for.
I know that we could talk a long time about your book, but I was really in particularly, there are some particular things that I wanted to give you a chance to discuss, and that is the section of the book that talks about, all right, now that we know this stuff, what are we going to do about it? The response, what must be done? And at the end of each of these chapters, starting with chapter 9, you talk about what are some concrete things that companies can do and that the U.S. government can do and that individuals can do.
Well, there's so many of them. One is that the pandemic shattered the notion that a company could maintain network perimeters, that we could defend our IT systems against intrusions, because people started working from home using their personal devices to communicate with their corporate devices, logging into sensitive networks from home. So that shattered the idea that we could defend our systems through the old-fashioned means of building a castle with a moat around it and high walls and a moat and guys on top with bows and arrows. So we need to adapt our whole IT model. We need to recognize that zero trust is the phrase that's thrown around, that we need to build greater security into our systems at every step of the way. The way it's worked and still is working in some areas is that once a sophisticated threat actor is able to get through the perimeter, they can then get in and start elevating their privileges and become system administrators. And they have legitimate logins, password, and user IDs. So they become legitimate, and they're deeply ensconced in the system. So we have to, as individuals and as companies, figure out how to build far more sophisticated IT systems. The way we write software is awful, that in a given software program, maybe there are millions of lines of code. And so someone who writes a new program, maybe they write 5,000 or 10,000 lines of code, but they go to public repositories like GitHub and they borrow thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of lines of code that are open source, that have been around for a long time. Nobody knows whether there are known vulnerabilities in that code that they're borrowing. So they can write a program, it's all very bright and shiny, and they send it out and people really enjoy it, but it could be seriously flawed and have be quite open to penetration by Russians or Chinese or other bad actors. So the way we design our IT systems, the way we write software, the way we engage in our companies, not respecting the boundaries between what's secure and what's not secure. And final piece of this is something like TikTok. 150 million Americans are on TikTok, which is owned by ByteDance, which is controlled by the Chinese government. So we have 150 million Americans going on there and putting up stupid videos of dancing this or dancing that. But they're revealing personal information about themselves and about potentially their parents. Their parents may have jobs in the defense sector or in the technology sector or in governmental decision-making sectors. We've left our data wide open for our foreign adversaries to collect. So we need to have an all-of-nation, all-of-society response to the fact that we need to harden up our systems. And so far, Gina Raimondo, the Commerce Secretary, was in China recently, and she said any American politician that said we have to shut down TikTok would lose the votes of all Americans under the age of 35, because those young Americans don't recognize that it's a national security challenge. So we have a lot of education to be done to help Americans understand the tremendous vulnerabilities we face and that we are enabling. We are helping it to happen.
Yeah, one of the chapters you talk about, it's time for a reboot of the education system. They need more civics classes, more education about the significance of our system, And at the same time, training people in, you said we need 100,000 more people with cyber knowledge just to operate our IT system, says Google. The right, Solarium right. Commission says 700,000.
Right. Well, so we've lived through one of the most sweeping technological changes in human history.
Right.
The internet, mobile computing, and now comes AI. This has changed the whole fabric of our society. And in general, we have not yet started to respond in terms of how we educate our young people about what's disinformation, and misinformation is closely related. When they go on social media, our young people are at a complete loss about, well, is this real? Or is this coming from China? Is this coming from kooks? Where's this coming? Where's the information coming from? We are not educating people about how do you know what is the authenticity of the information you're absorbing and basing your actions on. The polls show that at least half of the young people are getting their information from social media. So they're not reading newspapers, they're not listening to CBS. I hope they're listening to your radio station.
Me too.
But there is enormous gap in terms of how the technology has changed our society and our educational system and how it's informing people about what judge bad information, how to protect their systems, how to monitor and regulate what their children are doing online. And here comes the metaverse. The kids are going to be spending hours plugged into headsets in virtual worlds. think of the negative possible consequences of that. So we need sort of a wake-up call to say the technology is fun, it's so enabling in so many ways, but it comes with a responsibility to manage it and to manage its societal impact. It is an enormous subject and one we're just beginning to come to grips with.
It is quite a sobering book, but you do offer things that can be done if people will take the initiative, if educational systems, if the government will take the initiative, and if people will be wise in their use of social media, and if they see something that makes them wonder, go back, check the source. And if you go back deep enough and you can't figure out what was the origin of it, then be very, very skeptical about it.
Well, at the end of the day, our book sends a positive message, which is that there are things we can do about this situation. Public sector and private sector and average Americans, we have the capability to respond to this, and the game isn't over.
We've been in tight situations before and we've prevailed, but we've got to take it seriously and we've got to get busy. Bill Holstein, our guest today, he and his co-author, Michael McLaughlin, of Battlefield Cyber, How China and Russia Are Undermining Our Democracy and National Security. It's from Prometheus Books, available online and in your favorite bookstore. Bill, thank you very much for making time to be with us today on The Bookshelf.
Thank you, Doc.
Once again, we'd like to thank Bill Holstein for joining us today to talk about the book that he wrote along with Michael McLaughlin, Battlefield Cyber, How China and Russia Are Undermining Our Democracy and National Security, from Prometheus Books. It's a very sobering book, and I certainly encourage you to read it. I thank you for listening to our interview today. I encourage you to be wise about your use of social media, and don't just frivolously give away access to all of your secrets and all of your life. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and your favorite podcast on thebookshelf.podbean.com. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.